April 1st, 2026. I was at home on a Wednesday evening, and I turned on NASA TV to watch history.
Good afternoon from the space coast of Florida, where four astronauts are about to suit up for NASA's boldest test flight in a generation.
The Artemis II mission had been delayed several times in development and testing. NASA even rolled the massive rocket from the hangar on top of that behemoth movable platform nicknamed the Crawler out to the launch pad way back in February.
Right now, the 11 million pound rocket is creeping toward the launch pad at the Kennedy Space Center.
Only to have to slowly crawler it back into the hangar for more tests.
It is expected to take up to 12 hours to move the 322-foot rocket, with the journey spanning 4 miles back to its hangar for repairs.
But here it was, April 1st. The Artemis II rocket, again on the launch pad, fueled up. All four intrepid astronauts on board, all ready to go.
This crew could be the first humans to journey around the moon in more than half a century.
Everything I had read and heard indicated to me that this thing was going to take off as soon as possible, and on the first day, in the launch window, and probably within the first hour. From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, I'm your host, Dean Regas, and this is Looking Up. The show that takes you deep into the cosmos, or just to the telescope in your backyard, to learn more about what makes this amazing universe of ours so great. My guest today is NASA astronaut Tracy Dyson, who has spent more than a year in space over the course of three missions.
Great call out. The rocket is on its own. Four brave explorers ready to ride the most powerful rocket NASA has ever launched.
Okay, I have to admit it. I was completely surprised by my reaction to the Artemis II launch.
10, 9, 8, 7.
I mean, my palms were sweating.
RS-25 engines lit.
My breathing a little shallow. I was nervous. More than that, I think I was invested.
And lift off. The crew of Artemis II, now bound for the moon. Humanity's next great voyage begins.
I hadn't watched a rocket launch with astronauts on it for, I don't know how long. The human element just seemed to make a difference for me.
I think it's one thing that's common for astronauts is we just crave a challenge. And it's not just the astronauts, it's the team. It's the broad team.
Each of the four astronauts, they had their own journeys that brought them to being strapped into this rocket, to that moment. So I imagine what it must have been like for them as kids. Did they ever dream this big? I also wondered, like, how many years of training they did. All the simulations and practice missions, with the very real possibility that they would never, ever leave Earth.
As astronauts, one of our jobs, yes, is to be skill trained, to train for all the specific things that we have to do. But it's also, there's some kind of bigger picture, almost theoretical trainings that we do along the way. One of those is being able to task switch. One of those is being able to be adaptable. And one of them is preparation without expectation.
And then I pondered how I would have dealt with every delay, every setback.
You just get to see people at their best. You are bringing a team, you're giving them challenges, you think you've solved it, then you realize you haven't, and then you see them dig in and dig out of that challenge over and over and over again, and it's just inspiring.
This launch was not just for us astronomy nerds. It was inspiring for all of us. After all, astronauts are representatives to the universe. They are the explorers we want to be and achievers of what we want to achieve. We ride with them in our imaginations. Well, I do at least. I knew I wanted to see their view from the far side of the moon. The large, magnificent desolation of the lunar surface in the foreground, with the tiny, distant, verdant Earth floating delicately in the blackness of space. But you know what I wanted even more? I wanted a picture of an astronaut looking out of the window at that scene. For some reason, then I would feel like I was there too. Maybe if I talked to someone who's been in space and looked out that window onto the whole Earth.
Hi, my name is Tracy Dyson. I'm a NASA astronaut and looking forward to talking to everybody.
Well, Tracy, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you. My pleasure, Dean.
I'm sure with the recent Artemis II mission, there are a lot more people out there dreaming about becoming an astronaut. What motivated you to apply?
Oh, wow. Well, I applied quite a while ago, but it was around the time when I was 16 years old that I started thinking about becoming an astronaut. And it was motivated by the Challenger mission that had a teacher going up in space. And that was the first time I realized that astronauts were more than just test pilots and more than just folks in the military. And so I had an interest in science and a whole lot of other things like working with tools. And at that time, they were moving toward building the International Space Station. And it just seemed like everything that it took to be an astronaut and that astronauts were doing were things that I was already interested in.
Man, that is early to be, I don't know what I was doing when I was 16, getting my driver's license. You're ready to fly in rockets. And you've gone into space three times under some very different circumstances, once flying in the space shuttle and twice in a Russian Soyuz rocket. What stands out to you the most about the different launches?
You know, I could probably give a whole presentation on that. The shuttle is beautiful in its complexity, and its strength is in its redundancy, whereas the Soyuz is beautiful in its sturdiness, its robustness, and its engineering is built on this thing is going to last. And it's very rare when a component fails. Just from those two standpoints alone, approaching training and understanding these individual rockets and vehicles takes on a different nature. But also from the standpoint of how these rockets are secured to the launch pad, the shuttle is bolted to the launch pad through these gigantic bolts attached to the SRBs, the solid rocket boosters. After the main engines would come to full speed, right at T-minus zero, these pyrotechnics would fire and frange these bolts, and then the SRBs would lift the rocket off. And that process, when those SRBs light, it is a slam on concrete like no other, and there is no doubt that you are lifting off from the pad. On the Soyuz, it's actually suspended from the launch pad. When a Soyuz is taking off, these counterbalances drive these arms away from the rocket as it lifts up. What that means inside is that you can barely notice the liftoff. You know the engines have fired because you're looking at displays and you see data. Also, your countdown clock is telling you, yep, we're at the mark. You hear the rumble, you feel the rumble, but you don't feel this impact of thrust against a hard surface. And so it's a little bit more gentle and almost imperceptible compared to a shuttle.
I mean, the way you describe it, did it ever cross your mind, like you're strapped into the rocket, you're about to launch on this explosive thing, you're like, this is crazy. What am I doing here? Like, did that ever cross your mind, or you're just like, this is it, I'm ready, let's go?
Oh yeah, the latter. I was totally ready. I dig this stuff. So no, there was never a moment where I was like, what the heck am I doing? No, it was exhilaration. And you also have to talk to yourself, hey, focus on the displays and the monitors, you know, because if you treat it like an e-ticket ride at Disneyland, you're going to miss doing your job.
Well, and then how's your Russian?
Oh, я думаю, что это очень хорошо, потому что мне нужно говорить по-русски.
I might have got two of those words, but it sounded pretty good to me. You could fool me with it. Because I wonder, you know, like the camaraderie, what it's like up on the space station. You have people from different countries. And is it just like this big community up there?
Yes. Yes. And I think what is so, I think, fascinating and beautiful at the same time is that even depending on where your level is with English or Russian, preface by saying that the official language of the station is English and everybody knows that, but we do speak a fair amount of Russian, especially if we come up on a Russian vehicle. But just regardless of what language you speak, there is a way that operators and folks that are technically minded just think And so sometimes we can get by with this mix of our two languages because we understand the setting and the context that we're in and are like-minded in that regard. So that part's kind of beautiful. That's a testament to a lot of things, not the least of which is the spirit of the International Space Station. It completely meets the intent of bringing the world together for a common goal. And we live that out every day up on board the space station.
More looking up right after this. Well, I think that you have one of the most iconic pictures. At least it comes up on my my algorithm all the time. When I think of like people in space, there's a picture of you kind of like lying on your side, looking out the cupola, looking out the big window of the ISS. You're just like on your shoulder there. You just like look so comfortable. Was the ISS a nice home and an unbelievable view?
Yes. Yes, it was. And I'll tell you the story behind that photo. My first long duration mission, we had a failure of a pump module on board, and we had to do this series of spacewalks to fix it. And it was a little bit of a tense period of time. We got through that, and I had about 3 weeks left of my mission, and I needed to start preparing to come home. We have a team of psychological support up there, and my two psych docs asked me at that point, they said, "What, you're getting ready to come home? And what is it that you're going to miss the most?" And I said, "It's going to be that view out the cupola." And our increment was one of the first to live on board with the cupola. It had arrived on a shuttle mission just prior to us getting there. And so there wasn't a whole lot of experience using or even viewing out the cupola. So I was very privileged to have an entire increment with that incredible view and opportunity. And I loved it. Every night before going to bed, I was in that cupola just mesmerized by what I was seeing. And there's just never a moment where you get tired of it. It's one of the best memories that I have of that mission and any of my missions was that photo. So when you see it, yes, indeed, I was extremely relaxed. I was looking out the window as I always had. And that expression, if you can see it on my face, is one of just awe and content. That was somewhere where I felt like I could rest for a very long time.
Oh, it definitely comes across. And so I think you also have another unique perspective on things because you were just there on the space station back in 2024 after being away for almost 14 years. What was it like going back to the space station? Any changes, any feelings with that time away? I'm sure it made it more special.
It did in many respects, because once I got back from my mission in 2010, I was right at the cusp of assembly complete and the beginning of using the space station. We use the term utilization, where it was going to be purely science and technology demonstrations, not just a shuttle coming up every, you know, so often to bring elements and constructing it. And so to be there at that transition period, it was pretty clunky. So then to get to go up there and experience it was such a delight. I can't tell you how wonderful it was to live out some of those improvements and to see how much we could accomplish in the name of science and technology and the things that we really set out to do. I mean, we set out to build this space station and use it for science. And so it was just such a privilege to be able to see what our ingenuity and partnership around the globe was able to accomplish. Pretty cool stuff.
And you can level with me. Did you leave a little something on the space station in 2010 that you could come back and visit? Like, did you carve your name and said Tracy was here, and then you came back in 2024 and saw it?
I did. I put a note on ARED, which is our advanced resistive exercise device. This thing's a HOS on board, and everybody uses it from the Russian segment to the U.S. segment. It's used all day long. When I was up there, there was this list of things we had to remember to do to not only protect ourselves, but protect the equipment and our crewmate who was coming up after. And there was this acronym that I put on a card and I spelled it out. It was a mnemonic for us to remember. And I put it on the control unit with capped on tape. And in the bottom, I said, "Nothing's more important than what you're doing right now." And so you remember that when you're on ARED, that's the only thing you should be thinking about, because that thing could snap you in half if you weren't paying attention. And it was, and so before I got back up there in 2024, other colleagues of mine who've been up there said, oh, I saw your note. And so I knew it was up there for a long time, but it was pretty cool to go up and see my writing up still on this ARED. So yeah, that's the only thing I left.
Well, and we really appreciate you taking the time this week, especially with all the things going on with Artemis 2 and the mission there. And I'm sure you are like watching along and riding along with them in spirit. And I'm sure you're also thinking, boy, would I go up again? I don't know. Would you, if they said we have another seat on a rocket up for you, Tracy, would you do it?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what we're here for. We're here to help explore. And NASA has invested a lot of resources into training me and all of the experience I've had in space, not just to fulfill the tasks that I've been given, but also to shepherd the others that are coming along on their first flights. And so, yeah, if they had a place for me and a role for me to fill, I have the support of my husband and my family. And yeah, I'd definitely take it.
Well, this has been so great talking to you, Tracy. Thanks so much for taking the time. And we'll keep watching what's going on at NASA. And I love getting insights on astronauts. And you're one of the best ambassadors out there.
Oh, thank you, Dean. Well, it's been fun talking to you. And I appreciate everything you're doing to help educate folks out there on real life orbital mechanics, stars, and the universe, and giving everybody some truth about what you know.
I almost forgot to mention it. The day of the launch of Artemis 2, earlier in that day, I was the guest speaker to a few fifth grade classes at Sherwood Elementary. The topic was the solar system, which I've given there annually for the past 2 decades. But this time there was a twist. I told them, tonight there is a chance that 4 astronauts might blast off on a trip around the moon. I paused to gauge any reaction, but they were hard to read, so I followed up with, how many of you would go on a free 10-day flight around the moon and back? I'd say maybe like half of the hands went up. Later on, I was walking around with a meteorite and letting the students see that up close. One of the students asked me rather quietly, I heard one of the astronauts is African American. And another student added, and one of them is a woman. There was another girl next to them who I remember did not have her hand raised when I asked for volunteers to go to the moon. When I came by her table, she whispered in a mixture of disbelief and hope, is that true that one of the astronauts is a woman? I said, yeah, absolutely. She's flown in space before. She's like one of the most accomplished astronauts, and she's going around the moon. And I kid you not, this student slowly turned her head, then created the most perfect, faraway look. She was imagining a future her, the places she would go. I've never seen someone become an astronaut in real time before. Looking Up with Dean Regas is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds and I created the podcast in 2017. Ella Rowan and Carlos Lopez Cornu produce and edit our show and totally thrive in confined spaces. So, attention Artemis 4, they are available to run audio for you. Janelle Walton is our Vice President of Content, and Ronnie Salerno is our Digital Platforms Manager. Our theme song is Possible Light by Ziv Moran. Our social media coordinator is Hannah Flume, and our cover art is by Nicole Tiffany. I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.